At Keeley Companies, it is no secret that they believe in the power of people. In an effort to help their Keeleyans get to know each other a little bit better, they decided to launch the Who Do You Know campaign. The goal was simple. Keeleyans were encouraged to have a conversation with someone outside of their circle. That's it. These conversations, however, have brought people together and furthered their world-class culture. Shout out to the Keeleyans who have made an effort to have meaningful conversations with new friends. You can learn more about those conversations, about those amazing friends, by visiting them online at KeeleyCompanies.com.
Welcome to the Live Inspired podcast with John O'Leary. John is the number one national best-selling author of the book On Fire. He's a world-class inspirational speaker, and he's the host of the Live Inspired podcast. John interviews extraordinary individuals on their life story so that you can wake up from accidental living and more fully live your life story. Here's your host, John O'Leary.
Well, hello, my friends, and welcome to the Live Inspired podcast with John O'Leary. Have you ever wondered, how can we make education more exciting for kids? Maybe some of you are wondering how you can make it more exciting for yourselves. Well, in doing a little bit of research on how I can make it more exciting, more engaging for my children, I've got four, you know, I bumped into a YouTube video from a TED Talk given by today's guest. It was so moving, so fascinating, so encouraging that I reached out to that gentleman that night to invite him to be on our podcast. And about a day and a half later, I got an email back from Dr. Nick Furman, also known as Ranger Nick, saying, absolutely, I'm all in. Well, my friends, Dr. Nick Furman, you're going to know him during this podcast as Ranger Nick, is an environmental education professor at the University of Georgia. Often recognized for his engaging and informative presentations, Nick blends humor with educational content to connect with audiences of all ages. Today, Nick shares how he earned his nickname, Ranger Nick. You're going to love it. He's going to share how it led him to find his calling to educate and how his unconventional and yet profound approach helps students build essential skills and overcome anxiety. Throughout this conversation, really throughout Nick's life, he's going to remind us of the pivotal role that exceptional teachers play as mentors, as role models, and as champions in all of our lives. My friends, you're going to love today's episode. Prepare to be captivated by Ranger Nick and his contagious enthusiasm, unwavering passion, and genuine warmth as he reminds us how we can harness the power within to create meaningful change in our lives and in the lives of those around us. So without further ado, let me loop him in. He's not a university professor today. His name is Ranger Nick. Ranger Nick, welcome to Live Inspired with John O'Leary.
Thank you so much, Mr. John. I so appreciate you taking time out of your day to talk to me. I'm so excited to be here.
Man, I love your energy for life. It is infectious. It ignites me. I've spent a lot of time with you already just preparing for this episode. And I love you, man. I love your heart. I can't wait to share it for others. But if you had to introduce yourself to my listeners and viewers. So Nick Furman, how would you introduce yourself? What do you do?
I would say that I'm a professor at the University of Georgia, but I'm a teacher. And that's the best part of this job. And so whether it's our children at home, or whether it's all my students over the years at the University of Georgia, I'm a teacher. And if they ever took teaching out of my job, I would quit tomorrow. It is the best thing that I do. And it's literally my favorite thing to do above any hobby is teach and talk. And so that's me. That's my passion. That's my love.
So you're partying in the state of Georgia, the great state of Georgia, but it's not where you were born. It's not where you were raised. I'm going to throw you into a vehicle. We're going to head northbound for a little bit. We're going to go all the way up to Maryland, man. Talk about growing up as a kid. Just start talking about your family at first.
Yeah. So I have one sister who lives in Southern California. She's a nurse out there and has been a nurse for a long time. And growing up in Maryland, my parents always had a passion for the outdoors, and particularly my mom, a love for animals. And just loved helping, feeding the birds, taking care of sick wildlife that we might find, a bird that falls out of a nest, helping that. And I grew up around that. And as a little kid, I always had a passion for animals, and I would go and find turtles and snakes in the woods near our house, and I would keep them. And I would keep them in aquariums in my room, so I had all kinds of wildlife as pets. And then in the neighborhood where I lived, if somebody was having a birthday party, sometimes the neighbors would say, "Hey, Nick, would you come over and bring some of your animals and put on a little nature show?" So that's what I would do. As like 7 and 8 years old, I'd be taking these animals out and teaching with them. And so that was me growing up. It's always being in front of an audience and always just feeling like that's where I belonged, was teaching and standing in front of people. And my great-grandmother always said, and she lived to be almost 100, she always would call me her little preacher boy, because she said, ever since I was little, "You're going to become a preacher," or something like that, because you love to help mentor others and inspire others in front of an audience. And that's really I don't have many talents, but I really think that's the only thing I do that comes just so easy to me, is teaching and talking in front of others. So growing up, I did that. I volunteered with a gentleman that I came to know as Ranger Bill. He was a park ranger in Maryland.
I was first exposed to you was through that TED talk you gave, where you slowly unpacked being on a little tile square, being in class, being age 7, excited for a guest speaker, and it's Ranger Bill. Talk about your day at age 7 meeting Ranger Bill.
Well, just to tell you, John, thanks so much for remembering that. I mean, that takes a lot to remember that piece from that talk. It comes across so naturally for you, so thanks for that. But that's true. I mean, here was a guy, and I think to myself, what if I wasn't in school that day and I didn't get to cross paths with this guy? So here comes Ranger Bill into my classroom when I was 7 years old. We're on the little carpet squares, and he comes in and he brings these animals, wild animals that had been injured, that he was using as ambassadors of educational messages. And he comes in there, and the way this guy edutained, and I love that word, you know, the way he used the animal to tell a story and talk about how you could help this animal in its habitat. And you got to see this owl or hawk or snake or turtle right up close. I just looked at that and said, that's what I want to do. Like that job, that's what I want to do. And so I went home and told my parents. Of course, I had been doing the birthday party thing with the animals. And I saw this guy that was his job. He was getting paid to do that. That was it. And so my parents had always encouraged me to go down that path. And first generation college student, you know, went off to college wanting to study how to do that stuff. So it's like that's all I'd ever wanted to do. And it was because of running into that guy. That's how powerful that was.
And is it a true story that you ran into that guy at age 7 and then you started stalking that guy and going to the library where he would be speaking and going to other birthday parties where he'd be presenting, and you would always be in the back of the room watching this guy do his work?
Yeah. It was like, I was like a groupie, you know, like I would just be, I'm sure it was awkward because he's probably like, who's this little blonde haired kid in the back of the room just showing up watching me? To walk up to him with my parents, it was like the whole starstruck thing, you know, where, oh my gosh, I'm approaching this celebrity figure. And then my parents asked him about me helping him. And that's when I started cleaning out a bunch of cages for him over the years, just to be around the animals and him. And that was it. And it took a lot of risk, I think, for him. He would let me stand up on a stage with him and hold some animal and talk about it. And I'm sure people thought, look at this little kid. And I had my ranger uniform and all this as a little kid. And I'm up there holding this owl and talking about it. I'm sure it was pretty unusual for the public to see that. And then the whole Ranger Nick thing, when they started calling me Ranger Nick, it was just, and my students still to this day, I've been teaching college 17 years, and still to this day, students call me Ranger Nick. It's way more preferred than Dr. Furman. I love it my whole life.
What was it like the first time that Ranger Bill's subordinate heard his own name, Ranger Nick? What was it like the very first time someone called you Ranger Nick?
So it was like, I felt like I had made it, you know, like I remember I was standing there holding an owl, and a guy from the news came up to me. I was at a festival around the holidays. And whenever you have live animals, people with TV cameras like that, because it's just cool. So this guy walks up to me and says, hey, can I interview you? And he asked me my name off camera. And then when they went live, he said, I'm standing here with Ranger Nick. And I thought, okay, so all these people at home just got to hear this. He called me Ranger Nick. After all those years of hearing Ranger Bill, it was really cool. I mean, there's a surreal thing. And it sounds so simple. Like, here's this little kid wanting to be a park ranger. But when you want something like that, when it's a dream of yours, right, and it happens, that's pretty wild. Yeah.
You went off to Virginia Tech for college?
I did. Yep. I went to Virginia Tech and studied forestry there while I was working for the Department of Natural Resources with Ranger Bill. So during the summer, I would come back home and continue to work. And sometimes on the weekends, I'd make that drive from Blacksburg, Virginia, back to Baltimore, Maryland to do that. After being at Virginia Tech for the first degree, I thought I would get that degree and I would go back home and keep doing the Ranger Nick thing. And I had that imposter syndrome, I guess, about college. And I didn't know that I was smart enough to get a master's degree. I mean, oh my gosh, that was big time. But I had an opportunity to earn a master's degree and get an assistantship. I was paid a little bit of money and they covered my tuition. And I got an opportunity to teach while working on my master's. And that's where it really convinced me that I need to be a teacher. This is what I want to do.
Did I hear you right that you're a first generation college grad?
That's right. Yeah. I was first one in my whole family to go to college. I think about that with my own students now. Some of my freshmen that I teach every semester are in that same boat. And I was in this dorm. There were like 3,000 guys in this dorm. It was the largest all-male dorm on the East Coast at the time, in the late 90s. And it was this crazy roommate, and you're away from home. And college was not like high school for me. There were several times when I just said, I don't know that I want to do this. And my parents supported that. They said, look, if it's not for you, come back home and do something else. So that was always supported too. But I'm really glad I stuck out that first year, that freshman year, because I started getting into my major classes, and that's when it really started yet. So I think about that with my own students. They're dealing with a lot, and they just got to persevere, you know.
Tell me about why you decided to go and get your PhD.
I worked on that master's degree at Virginia Tech, and I thought that I would just get that and go back to Maryland. And it was through that master's degree that I ended up being a TA, a teaching assistant with a professor, and I taught dendrology. So that's tree identification. And in a lab, we would go outside in lab every week in the woods, me with students, and I would teach them how to identify trees. And every week when we would do that, I got to see the same students and I got to see them grow and I got to see them struggle with remembering these different tree names and the Latin names for the trees and all that. And I was like, when I did the Ranger Nick thing, I would walk into an auditorium and there might be 500 people in there and I'd take out the animals and I'd do my show and then I would leave. And I would never get to meet them. I would never get to know if I made a difference. It was just kind of go there and do it and leave. It was fun. I didn't know if they learned anything. But when I was a master's student at Virginia Tech doing that TA thing, and I got to see these students grow and I got to mentor them. And that was the coolest thing. So when I learned, so that's what a professor does. I mean, they do research too, but they teach students in that way. I thought, well, man, okay. So I went from the Ranger Nick thing to maybe I could be a professor and I could teach other people how to be like Rangerville and maybe like me. And that's what ended up happening. I went off to school at the University of Florida. And I know at the University of Georgia, I hear a lot about that. The Gators and the Dogs don't get along too well, you know, but what an experience. I went off to school and I thought, again, imposter syndrome. I don't know if I'm smart enough to get a PhD, but I studied the difference that animals make in teaching. Just like I had seen for all those years of doing the Ranger Nick thing, that's what my dissertation, my big book report, I call it, that's what it was about. And I sat there as I was going through that, and I had some great mentors when I was at University of Florida, and I got to teach when I was at the University of Florida, and I loved it. And I was sitting there thinking to myself, I get to do this stuff that I love while I'm going to school and making a little bit of money as a teaching assistant. I've always felt so fortunate that I've gotten a chance to do those things. And I don't take any of this stuff for granted, you know? So to be able to go to school and then go off and become a professor and teach what I teach, I feel lucky every day. I really do.
So without unpacking all 311 pages of the thesis, what were a couple of the highlights just for our novice listeners paying attention right now to our conversation? What was the point of your dissertation?
Thanks for asking. And if you ask any person with an advanced degree about their big book report, they would love to tell you. And I would love to tell you too, because it was such a big part of my life. The bottom line, so all those years of teaching with animals, I taught a lot with birds of prey. So owls and hawks and falcons and all that kind of stuff. And 75% of the birds that we used in teaching were physically injured. Like you could visibly look at them and see, oh, I know why Ranger Nick has that owl, because it's missing an eye. It was hit by a car. Or that hawk is missing a wing and that thing ran into a telephone wire. So it was obvious why that animal was in captivity and was being used in teaching. We had other birds that were perfectly fine, that were raised in captivity, nothing visibly wrong with them. And I remember taking both of those kinds of animals out in front of audiences. And I remembered hearing the emotional response that someone would have to seeing an owl missing an eye or missing a wing. People just, they had this empathy for that animal. Oh my gosh, what can I do to help so that other birds do not have the same fate? And I would take out a bird that wouldn't have any visible injuries and people would be like, well, that's cool, but why do you have that? Why isn't that wild? You know? So I basically said, okay, I want to know what difference using an injured bird has on an audience versus a non-injured bird. So we set up a study in South Florida where there are a lot of retirement communities and older folks that would love to learn about birds of prey. I had a good friend of mine that worked at a zoo in Tampa, Florida. And we put together a presentation where he would give a presentation with all injured birds of prey. And he would give the same presentation with all non-injured birds of prey, same species. And we would give the audience a questionnaire when they were done to measure their feelings of empathy and emotional connection to the birds. Now, we also did a little control group. Like, they didn't get any live animals. They got pictures of birds. But they were just as happy. But here's the thing that got me. Yeah, the injured birds, as you might expect, produced a lot of empathy in folks. And the people that saw the injured birds were so much more likely to want to help them than the people were who saw the non-injured. And that was kind of cool to verify that assumption, that hypothesis that we had. Yes, injured animals, tug at emotions, are maybe more effective to use in teaching than a non-injured bird. That's kind of cool. Nobody had ever looked at that before. But the thing that got me, the control group, all the older folks that got the pictures of the birds of prey, and they got the same questionnaire that the other two groups got, injured and non-injured, those people remembered more from the presentation and actually learned more than either of the groups that got the live birds. So at first I was kind of, well, this is interesting. And selfishly, I would say, I was kind of hoping people would learn more with a live animal. But it got us to think about the distractor factor that can come from animals in teaching. That when you have this live animal, this owl in front of an audience, after a certain amount of time, that animal is not helping anymore because the participants in the room are not listening to that educator anymore. They're just staring at that bird. Look at how beautiful it is and all that. So we figured out that animals after a certain amount of time can actually detract from learning. They can distract. So, and we actually figured out that about 7 minutes is the magic number to have an animal out in front of an audience and have it be effective. So if you really want to get down to business and teach the audience something, all right, take the bird or the snake or the lizard or alligator or whatever out, keep it out for about 7 minutes and then get that thing away, put it back. And now let's talk about some serious stuff and I'll have your undivided attention. So in a nutshell, that was what it was. It was about something that I had years of experience with that I got to study for that dissertation. And that was really cool.
Well, Dr. Nick Furman, congratulations on passing that test and then taking your talents north again, not all the way up to Maryland, but back to Georgia. Listen, man, Georgia's an incredible university, incredibly difficult to get in these days. You're a professor there. Talk about landing your first job there and what was it at first you were teaching?
I tell my students this too. I joke with them. I say, especially freshmen, I say, look, it's a little intimidating to stand in front of y'all because I could not get into this school when I was a freshman. There's no way. I mean, it's tough to get into UGA. And now here I am teaching them. Your SAT scores are way higher than mine. But when I was first hired, they asked me to teach a program development class. So how to develop educational programming for the general public. So of course, a lot of the examples I used in that class related to animals and teaching and environmental education, which is what I do. What's a cool thing about being a professor? You can blend in your talents and passions and research into your classes, and that's encouraged. And then I taught a statistics class, a graduate stats class, because I love statistics. It's just one of those things. And I love it because it gives people anxiety, and I want to reduce that. I want to help them see that you can do this. It's easier than you think. And so I did that. And then when I was first hired, I had just a little bit of a teaching role, taught a couple of classes. And then after I made it through promotion and tenure, which is a big thing at a university, and then my appointment really flipped. I took on a lot more teaching because that's what I loved. And the people that were around me recognized that. So I got to do a lot more teaching and I developed a course called Teaching with Animals, which is exactly what it sounds like. It's how to use animals as ambassadors in front of an audience. And that was just a dream. I mean, I've been teaching that about 11 years. And I mentioned it in the TED Talk, but I'll just tell you, here's my girl Sharon, one of my stars that comes into class, if you can see it on the video there. Sharon's a fox turtle.
Ranger Nick, for those who aren't looking, they're listening right now. Describe who you're holding up right now in front of the camera.
So I'm holding up an Eastern box turtle onto my camera here, and her name is Sharon. And Sharon was hit by a lawnmower. It's kind of a really sad story a few years ago. And she is a permanent resident with us. She cannot be released because she is missing an arm and she can't hibernate and dig underground without that arm. So she comes to class with me a lot, her and a lot of other animals. And my students love that because when they're holding Sharon, the turtle, or a snake or a lizard or a duck or a chicken or whatever it might be, they don't feel like the attention is on them. They feel like the attention's on the animal. And they do such a better job with public speaking. So that class is really a lot about oral communication skills and helping students overcome speaking anxiety. So I had a chance to do that. And I had a chance really 2 years ago to tell you, John, 2 years ago, my position changed again. So I joined another school on campus. I was in the College of Agricultural and Environmental Sciences for about 13 and a half years. And then 2 years ago, I came to the Warnell School of Forestry and Natural Resources at UGA, just about a quarter of a mile away from where my office used to be. And I'm now the associate dean here for outreach. So I get a chance to provide leadership to others here and help get the brand of our school and our image out there all over the place, really. So it's been a real joy. I'm still teaching, still doing all that stuff, but just have that leadership role has been really special.
Tell me why it is that if I'm holding a turtle in front of a class, I'm less nervous about the speech that I'm delivering. And then go one step farther and say, and so what do we do with that knowledge?
Yeah. Okay. So I'll tell you that the idea of being able to stand in front of a group, particularly a group that you have to see multiple times, is especially anxiety rich because I have to see these people again. If you stand in front of a bunch of strangers once, and you really mess it up, well, I don't have to see them anymore. So hopefully they'll forget about that awful presentation. But if you're standing in front of a group that you got to see again next week and the week after, it is especially nerve-wracking. So the idea of that animal, what it does is it forces a student to not script their presentation, something I'm very much against. I've seen students script a presentation and want to memorize it. And then they get off track in their mind with the lines that they've memorized.
Done.
And it just becomes a train wreck.
Right.
So it convinces them how to be more of a conversationalist. And that animal is naturally going to move and just kind of do things that animals do. And it takes that attention off of that student and gives them something to talk about as an example. And I'll tell you, this is a goofy story, but I've used it before and it's really true. I have had football players that you would think they play in front of 90-some thousand people here at the University of Georgia. They take that class and they stand up in front of 30 students in my class. And they are physically, you can see it, they are nervous. Like they could be shaking or really just not know what to say in front of this small group of students. I give them Sharon, the box throw, and they're holding it. And Sharon looks especially small because their hands are so big. They're these big guys, you know. And they'll be standing there and they'll be talking to the class, telling the class a story while they're holding Sharon. And all of a sudden, right, Sharon pees. That's what happens with animals, right? So they're holding this turtle and okay, the turtle just pees. And so they don't really know what to do. They kind of laugh a little bit and the class laughs a little bit. But then I notice from that moment forward, from when that turtle did that unexpected thing, from that moment forward, they are so much better of a communicator because this unplanned thing just happened and they had to roll with it and they're still alive. And everybody's still okay. Nobody's booing them or laughing at them. And they realize, you know what? If I'm just kind of myself and I go with it, I'm flexible a little bit, it's going to be okay. So that unplanned stuff is so important. Just, I think, in life, to be able to have an agenda, have a plan, but don't be so tied to that that you can't capitalize on a teachable moment. And I love that phrase. You can't capitalize on a teachable moment when it happens. And that's so important.
Well, let's talk about teachable moments. When you delivered a TED Talk that's been listened to first by an audience of a couple hundred, now by almost 10 million people, you began by talking about what great teachers impart, what they are, how they show up. And one of them is that they utilize teachable moments.
Yep.
So talk about teachable moments. Why is that a positive thing for great teachers to utilize?
Oh my gosh. So celebrating mistakes, that line, that's so important. And I have been asked before the question, Ranger Nick, what is the most embarrassing thing that's ever happened to you in front of an audience? And I'd say, do you have like an hour? Because I got a whole list of them, right? Because when you have animals and you're a high energy guy like me and you're moving around a lot and you have animals, stuff's going to happen. And I like to think that when mistakes happen, particularly when I make mistakes, it builds rapport with my audience. It reminds the audience that this guy is a semi-normal person. And that, okay, so he made a mistake. I'll never forget. I was asked this, what's the most embarrassing thing? And the first thing that came to my mind was I was on a stage in a classroom. And the stage was maybe 3 or 4 feet off the ground, big classroom. I'm up there teaching. And I was looking at the slide. I turned around, looked at the slide, and I walked off the stage. I mean, just off it and fell onto the ground right in front of the 150 some students. When that happened, I remember laying there on the ground and you could hear a pin drop. I mean, no sounds at all. And I'm laying there like, okay, I think I'm all right. Nothing's broke. Okay. And I stood back up and I was like, okay, so that just happened and I'm all right. And I really appreciate y'all putting up with me and that today. From that class, every class forward, more students came down to the front before class and after class to talk with me. I don't know if they felt bad for me or they were embarrassed for me, like this poor guy, but it was almost like, I was a normal person. Things happen to people and it just makes you more human. I think no matter what you do in your life, stuff's going to happen and you can own it and say, yeah, all right. So I messed up. That was unplanned and that happened. but what can we learn from it? And as a teacher, I'm really lucky because there's few things that we can do in a classroom that are really, really going to be an emergency. And if we make a mistake, okay, so we made a mistake. That's why we're here. We're here to learn, and let's reflect on it, and let's move forward. And I think that celebrating teachable moments, celebrating mistakes, that is so important to do. I don't care what you do. Laughing about a mistake is often a really good idea because it just reminds us, okay, so I learned something from that. Yeah, it's so important.
Sorry, you stage dived. I've stage dived twice in my career, and I think I have a few more to go. And the room silences, but then they empathize.
Yep.
Then they connect, and then we collectively grow. And it's a beautiful way to connect with people, to celebrate the mistakes and utilize them as teachable moments. You also mentioned that great teachers appreciate differences. Why is that something that a great teacher, and I want to make sure our listeners are paying attention. Yes, I am talking to educators, but I'm also talking to parents and aunties and uncles and neighbors and anyone who's ever loved anyone more than themselves for a moment. Yep. So that includes you. So great teachers appreciate differences. Why is that important?
Yeah, every single person brings something different to the table. And sometimes we can look at someone, and this happens in a university setting. We look at someone by their title. Well, Ranger Nixon, associate dean. So he has a certain title, stigma. And this person over here is a custodian. So they have a certain, you know, they do what they do. And this person has this title. Well, if you just kind of remove the titles, and you look at somebody and they're another person and they're doing the best that they can and they've got great ideas, no matter what their title is, you can learn a lot by talking to the custodian about what's happened in this company or this business over the past 15 years. Maybe sometimes more than you can by talking to the big boss, you know? So removing those titles and appreciating what someone brings to the table and recognizing that, not by their title, them as a person. You know, I look at my students. And I tell this to faculty sometimes that I work with some folks, not in the school I'm in, but across campus and other departments that look at teaching like it's, I have to go to class and teach. I would rather be doing my research instead of teaching. And I've never been able to understand how you couldn't get excited about getting to talk about what you love to a bunch of folks that are interested in hearing it. And they forget, I think, that each of those students is somebody's son or daughter. And I think being a parent now, I see each one of those students as somebody's child. And that, yeah, they might be 20 or 30 years old, but that's somebody's son or daughter. How would they like to be talked to? Wouldn't they like to be respected and appreciated and brought to the table and asked what they think about something? It's amazing what happens when you ask somebody what they think about something. So how do you know? What do you think about this? What ideas do you have? And value that. Appreciate what they bring, their experiences. If we listen to what they have to say and forget what their title is for a minute, gosh, that can take you really far. You can get a lot of wisdom that way. And you can also learn that just because somebody's a professor doesn't mean they know everything. I mean, you're talking to me. I've always learned it, you know? And I really do believe that the whole title thing, like I said, Ranger Nick, that's always going to be better than Dr. Furman because I think it makes me more of a normal person. Just call me Nick. That's my name. Don't worry about the whole title thing. But another part of this appreciate differences is my passion for working with individuals with special needs. And that was something that I brought up in the TED Talk. And my wife and I, for years, we just, ever since I was little, I look at individuals that have special, and I like this, have special abilities, not disabilities, right? They have special abilities. They bring something to the table. And we've worked with an organization here in Northeast Georgia called Extra Special People, ESP. And I've involved my students in going to ESP, several hundred young people, young adults with special needs go there. And to pair up college students with those individuals that bring so much excitement, so much work ethic to the table, it's amazing the respect that they can have for each other. And my college students will say to me, you know, I had no idea that that individual with Down syndrome or whatever they might have as their special ability, I had no idea what they could bring to the table. when they listen to them and they learn from them. So, my goodness, that whole idea of individuals with special needs, special abilities, that is probably the best thing I've ever done in my career, is partner with that organization. Such a cool thing. Really is.
Great teachers, in addition to providing experiences like that, that truly are life-changing, also provide real-time feedback.
Yeah.
Sometimes positive feedback. You've shared the story before, and I think it's tremendous. And in fact, I've told several educators, some in primary education, they still hang out with babies, that some old professor does this at a college level, and they won't believe me. So I'm going to have you share the story right now. What is one way that you celebrate students who have great grades in your classroom?
Yes. Well, anybody in my class, I don't care if you're a freshman or you're working on a PhD, if you get a 90% or above on an assignment, I put a stamp on the assignment. And so right now, right at my desk, and I didn't do this, I didn't know you were going to talk about this thing, but here's a turtle stamp. If you're watching the video, there's a turtle stamp. I put a stamp on your assignment. And for years, I used to think students are going to think this is so corny. You know, this guy puts a stamp on it. And I would put a turtle stamp and I would write excellent work. Uh-huh. Or I would put an owl stamp and write owl standing job. And I sit there and giggle to myself and do it. But there was, and I'll tell you this story. I was teaching down at the University of Florida, had football players that would take one of these big classes I was teaching. And I handed back assignments one day in class, and I got done that, went back to my little cubicle in my office. And one of the football players came by the office and knocked on the door. And I look over, and there he's standing there, and he like took up the whole door. Just big linebacker guy. And he's standing there holding this assignment in his hand that I had just handed back in class. And he's like, Ranger Nick, can I talk to you for a second? So he comes over, and I thought for sure he's going to want to talk about his grade, because maybe his grade wasn't as high as it could be. Okay. So he came over and he goes, Ranger Nick, look, I got a 91% on this, and I didn't get a stamp. And he hands it to me, and I'm looking at his assignment. Oh my gosh, I must have overlooked. I forgot. And I put that little owl stamp, and I wrote owl standing work. And I mean, to see this guy's face, this big linebacker, and I hand his little assignment with owl standing and a stamp. He walked out of that little cubicle office like he was going to go show his mom. He was so proud of himself. And I thought, for that guy to walk all the way to my office to get us, damn, it meant that much. That was all I needed to hear. So from that day forward, that's what I do, is I put, and I will forget every once in a while. And students will tell me, hey, Ranger Nick, I think you forgot my stamp. Oh, I'm so sorry. It matters to them. It motivates them. And it's just that little stuff that they will remember years later. I promise you.
Ranger Nick, Professor Nick, friend Nick, there are a lot of folks listening to our conversation right now who are just kind of burned out. In particular, if they work in education, they're just tired. So for those who are tired out right now by the work they do, what's the encouragement you might give them?
I would say that the biggest piece of encouragement is that you don't realize the difference you're making sometimes right away. You're sometimes for a 10th grade high school teacher, their audience is a lot different than mine, because those students have to be there, whether they want to or not. And they might not be that interested in the topic like they are here at the university, because they take the class out of choice, let's say. So that teacher might not realize the difference that they're making content-wise. But I want them to realize that the little things that they do, those students are always watching. And the students are not, it's the Maya Angelou quote that I love. Those students are not going to remember all the content that that teacher shared. They're not. That's why they take notes. That's why they study those notes. You're not going to remember the content, all of it. But they will remember how you make them feel. And you can do little things, like not only the stamp, but if you see a student do something that you think is especially good, send them an email about it. Pull them off to the side and say, hey, I want you to know, I saw what you did there. Nice job. It's amazing what little things like that can do when people feel appreciated. And I think we're so quick to point out things that aren't so positive. We need to be just as quick to say, I noticed you did something, and I want you to know I saw it, and I think that's really awesome. And I'll give you an example. At my son's school, in the morning, there is a police officer that stands outside of that school and directs traffic on a pretty busy road out front of this elementary school. And to watch this guy direct traffic, this guy loves what he's doing. I mean, he is so good at it. And he's waving to people. People will drive by him as they turn into the school with their dog in the car. And this police officer has dog treats in his pocket that he gives to the dogs as they drive. I mean, it is the coolest thing to watch this guy. So I wrote a note to the sheriff's office. I said, I just want you to know, and I'm sure they know, because I hope I'm not the only one that ever wrote a letter. But I said, I want you to know how great of a job this guy is doing, because he brings personality, he brings passion. And he is making, I really believe, he's making a difference in somebody's day just by being there. I mean, he's done that to me before. I look at him and go, look at this guy. He is directing traffic, but he is putting his passion into it and just knocking it out of the park. It's outstanding. So I think when we feel like we're not making a difference, realize that people are watching you and you really are making a difference, but be that difference to somebody else. Tell somebody else, you're doing a great job. That can go so far. It really can. At least it'll make you feel better to tell them they did something right. It's a cool feeling.
Decades ago, you were 7 years old on a carpet tile, looking up to a guy with an owl and a falcon and a turtle, telling you about life and animals and nature and how all these things play together as one. Are you in awe of this journey that you've been on in the decades that have followed? Can you believe that this is your life now, that you learned from Ranger Bill and now you are Professor/Ranger Nick doing similar work with college age kids?
I really do. And I don't take it for granted. And I'm not one that I don't like talking about my stuff because I don't want to seem like I'm bragging or boasting. And so I don't a lot, but I do sit and think to myself sometimes and go, you know, it's pretty wild how this has worked out. And because of that TED Talk, I've had a chance today to get to meet you, and I learned about your story, and our paths would never cross, I don't think, because without that TED Talk. And that TED Talk has opened up doors for me where I've been able to go around the country and speak to big audiences about just kind of me. And I just sit and think to myself, that's pretty wild that I was able to figure out at an early age what I was supposed to do. And I've never, ever wanted to do anything else. And so I don't care what it is. I tell people, if you like doing something, tell somebody you like doing it. And don't be afraid to get passionate about it. Because for me, I really believe that's the reason I've been able to make it, is because I've never, ever held back my passion and enthusiasm. And sometimes I'll just tell people, look, I can't help it. I'm so fired up about stuff. That's me. And thank goodness nobody has ever said that that's not what we want. They always say, well, that's pretty cool. You get excited. It gets me excited. So, oh my goodness. I really do. I think to myself, I'm very fortunate. And I'm glad that I get a chance to hopefully remind everybody they can do it too. Whatever you do, just get excited about it. My goodness, it's contagious.
So I've been fortunate to hang out in many teachers' lounges in elementary, middle school, high school, and at university level. Yeah. And one thing that is missing in many of them is the exuberant joy. Those can be places where joy goes to die. It can stifle the joy and creativity out of the individuals that step into them. And I think it is so beautiful, Nick, that you walk in and you just spark it up, man. It has to be so contagious, so healthy for these other professors and educators to be around you. I thank you for reminding us what great educators look like in action, for the difference that they can make. And we tether all of our great educators, professors, leaders, and servants together with 7 questions. We call them the Live Inspired 7. Every great sojourner before you has walked through these 7 questions. They're safe. Bring the turtle with you for the walk. Here we go. Question number 1. What's been the most impactful book you've ever read?
I would say Last Child in the Woods. It's Saving Our Children from Nature Deficit Disorder is what it's called. And that book came out, gosh, probably 20 years ago now, but it reminded us of the power of spending time outside in natural places with people that we care about and all the benefits that come from that. And I think as the years go by, we spend more and more time on a phone and less time looking around outside. So that's been very, very impactful for me. And I try to bring that up in my teaching. Observational skills, look around you outside at some of the cool stuff.
If that book was relevant 20 years ago, I can only imagine how needed it is right now.
Yeah, I agree.
Question number two, what was one positive characteristic, one trait that you possessed as a cute little boy growing up in Maryland that you wish you exhibited as brilliantly as a professor today in Georgia?
I think there was something about the whole Ranger Nick uniform thing, like looking a certain way when you go to do something. It kind of just shows credibility. Not that what I wear to class doesn't show credibility, but there is something about when I was little Nick and I would put that little Ranger uniform, like people were like, man, this guy, he's in his element. And I remember Ranger Bill always having that uniform on. It was just like, when you got that on, it's time to go to work and it's time to represent and be that teacher. I'll tell sometimes some of my students, if you put Ranger in front of anybody's name, that's a good thing. That helps your credibility.
Nick, I wish I was young again and could go to your classroom because I bet your kids have a blast, man. It's fun just hearing you. If your home caught fire and your kids and the college age kids you teach and your spouse and all the animals in your house are out safely, but the house is burning and you have an opportunity of running back in and grabbing one item, one physical thing, what would you come racing back outside with?
I would say some pictures. We've got a picture of my great grandmother, the one that always called me our little preacher boy. I think I would probably grab that. She has always been somebody that I've thought about as being the ultimate encourager of me doing what I'm doing. And she noticed something when I was a little kid that she just said, you're going to be a preacher. You're going to be in front of audiences inspiring them. So I think I would get that because I don't have that anywhere else, that original picture. The other thing I think I would get, this sounds just kind of odd, but I have the original leather glove that I wore when I was little Ranger Nick, holding all those birds of prey. I still have that. That same glove I used all those years holding those birds. And sometimes I'll look at that and it will remind me of what I used to do and the fact that I still am doing those things. And that's been really special. Who would think a black leather glove, a welder's glove, would be something that I would get, but there's a lot of sentimental value to that leather glove.
Well, with that leather glove on your right hand, if you could sit on a bench on a gorgeous day and have a long conversation with anyone, living or deceased, who would you like to be next to?
I would definitely want to talk to Steve Irwin. I would love to have met him. I have been, and this is a very, very humbling thing, when folks that watch the Ranger Nick TV thing that we do, when folks will say, you're like a modern day Steve Irwin, you know, with the energy and I hope the genuineness. I always tell people I'm exactly the same way on TV as I am in person, I hope. And they say, yeah, you are. I would have loved to have met him. I feel like he's the kind of guy that loved what he was doing. He was who he was, who you saw in that show. And he is just forever going to be that hero of environmental education and conservation education and passion.
First time I saw you live, and as I've been learning more about your story, every time I'm hearing your voice, that's who I'm also hearing. So that passion,
that's cool. Thank
you. Passion for nature and life and knowledge that he delivered so brilliantly is how you deliver your message as well.
Oh, thank you.
What's the best advice you've ever received, whether it's from Steve Irwin or anybody else?
I would say the best advice, and my dad has said this and several others, keep the main thing the main thing. Whatever you're doing, focus on that. There's all these other things that are going on, but keep the main thing the main thing. As a teacher, what am I trying to accomplish? What's that one thing I'm really trying to hit on? What's my take-home message? And whatever you're doing, keep the main thing the main thing. Don't get bogged down, distracted, comparing yourself to other people. It's so easy to do. Keep the main thing the main thing. Be you. And like I say, that advice about passion and enthusiasm, so many people have told me, Nick, never lose that. No matter what you're doing, even if you have to give a eulogy somewhere someday, be passionate, get excited, because that's going to help people. Absolutely.
We've got a gentleman we've recorded on the podcast named Matt Miller. He's been the principal of the year for the state of Missouri. He retired out of that, joined us in our organization here called Live Inspired. Everybody calls him Coach Matt, kind of like Ranger Nick. They all call him Coach Matt.
Yeah.
And he always says, man, keep the main thing the main thing.
Good deal.
So my question out of you is, what advice would you give yourself at age 20? If you could go back to Virginia Tech and whisper a little wisdom your way at age 20, what would you say?
I would say, remember that you can make a difference going back and doing the Ranger Nick thing in Maryland. But look at the difference you can make if you didn't hesitate to go to grad school and become a teacher or professor, where your difference can be multiplied. Don't think of yourself as being less than somebody else. You know, because I often think to myself, oh my gosh, everybody around me is so much smarter, and at least I can bring the passion. I can bring the enthusiasm. I got that. And I would say, don't forget that. Don't forget that. Know that, keep going down that road, keep learning, and realize the difference you can make can be a lot more if you stay on this path as a 20-year-old. And that would be good. Yeah. And I'm glad I did. There's a couple of times I almost didn't, but I'm glad I stayed on it.
Professor Furman / Ranger Nick, it has been said that all great people, all great teachers, can have their lives summed up in one sentence. How would you like yours to read?
I would say the same line that I say at the end of every one of our Ranger Nick television episodes. And that is, I always say, I'm Ranger Nick, reminding you that enthusiasm is contagious. So pass it on. That's it. That is me right there to a T. Just no matter what you do, if you're excited about it, genuinely, genuinely excited, that is always going to help you. And thank goodness that has helped me. Absolutely. Secret to life for sure.
Ranger Nick, thank you for your enthusiasm, not only for your work, but for life. It is indeed is contagious. It has a sparked renewal within my life, and I'm grateful for you.
Thank you, John. I so appreciate you saying that. It means the world.
My friends, that's Ranger Nick. My name is Ranger John O'Leary, and today is your day, leaders. Live inspired.
Well, my friends, how can you not leave today's conversation with Dr. Nick Furman, aka Ranger Nick, full of enthusiasm and passion for life? How can you not leave fired up? I love being reminded that sometimes the little things in life aren't so little, you know, like a special stamp. Regardless if you are a freshman or you are earning your PhD, scoring above a 90% on assignment earns you what? A special stamp in Dr. Nick's classes, and the kids love it. Just when he thought his stamps were a little bit corny, maybe a little bit unnecessary, and he stopped, in walks that big, burly football linebacker from the University of Florida, reminding him not only of the importance of stamps, that's part of it, but really the importance of being seen, of being recognized, of being set apart as being special. That's a gift a professor can give a student. It's also a gift that you and I can give those that we encounter throughout our days. If you enjoyed today's episode as much as I enjoyed bringing it to you, then you would also love the conversation I recorded a couple years back with my buddy Jared Korsoska. Jared is a New York Times bestselling author. He's an illustrator behind more than 40 books for young readers. It's a sweet and tender and emotional, sometimes funny conversation where Jared gets really honest about his journey. He talks about, in our conversation, how drawing and writing stories served as a lifeline for him growing up with a mother who was suffering from opioid addiction. He also shared the powerful role that teachers played in shaping his life. It's a great conversation. You can listen in with Jared on Live Inspired Podcast, episode 318, or by cruising over with me right now. Come on, step in with me to www.johnoleryinspires.com/podcast. I'll have a link right here in the show notes for this one on how you can check out the conversation with Jared. My friends, I want to thank you for being not only an awesome leader, but a phenomenal student. I appreciate you tuning in. We are impacting more lives, not only around the United States, but around the world. And we're grateful not only that you are part of our Live Inspired podcast movement, but that you're telling those that you work with, that you worship with, that you work out with, that you hang out with, that you check out the Live Inspired podcast with John O'Leary, and so should they. It's making a difference, and we're grateful for you. So my friends, I want to let you know right now that the foundation of your life is firm. The headwinds might be real, but the best is yet to come. So put a stamp on it for this time. And until next time, my name is John O'Leary. Today is your day. What a gift. Live inspired.
You know that Keeley Companies is all about fostering the world-class culture through their incredible cultural pillars. Well, it was time to add a seventh cultural pillar, Keeley Green. Guided by the mission to raise the sustainability standards by which they design, build, operate, and live, Keeley Green is dedicated to using a holistic approach to leave a positive impact on our environment, create a future that is sustainable for generations to come. In the words of Rusty Keeley, we are just getting started. You can learn more about that just getting started mentality and all the work they do by visiting my friends at Keeley Companies online at keeleycompanies.com.